KALW.
Right when we started doing the testing and then started getting these numbers back that felt really alarming is right when things started to reopen.
A clinic in East Oakland is on the front lines of fighting the spread of the coronavirus.
So it really has me bracing myself for what the coming weeks will hold.
Why COVID-19 is hitting the area hard, and will the protests increase the spread? Then a funeral director on how the pandemic is making it easier for some loved ones to say goodbye.
There's people all over from Florida, New York, and people were like saying the rosary. I was like, wow, this is beautiful.
And we'll head to San Quentin State Prison and hear from two unlikely cellmates.
So living with Baby Bear, this is my first time living with anyone that wasn't black and wasn't a gangbanger.
That's coming up. I'm Ben Trefney in for Hannah Baba, and this is Cross Currents. The world is changing. The weather's getting warmer, and many people are out protesting. But what hasn't gone away is the coronavirus, and East Oakland remains a hotspot for COVID-19. Recently, 11 people tested positive at a homeless camp near the Home Depot, and 12 employees of a Mexican grocery store in the Fruitvale District got infected. Roots Community Health Center in East Oakland is a testing site for COVID-19. Its founder is Dr. Noha Abalata. She talked with KALW's Janae Darden about how she's concerned that people are relaxing too fast given what's happening in Oakland.
The coronavirus is growing in Alameda County. Why?
You know, it's hard to say because we're just really ramping up testing now. And so sort of hard to sort out whether it's increasing or we just are finding it more. But my guess is that it's both.
I saw a statement that you put out on Facebook about your concerns about the pace that we're reopening the state. Ideally, how fast do you think we should be going as far as reopening?
Well, part of the reason why we wanted to do the testing at the level that we're doing it, you know, open to the community in East Oakland, is because I felt like we just really didn't know what we were dealing with. And so right when we started doing the testing and then started getting these numbers back that felt really alarming is right when things started to reopen. You know, I was seeing like a 10% positivity rate, 11% as of now, where we've done a little over 1,200. We have a little over 1,200 results back. We're at 13% positivity.
How does that compare to other places?
Yeah, so It depends. And again, because this has been such a moving target, it's so hard to even have a benchmark. But with our testing site, we're testing regardless of whether a person has symptoms or not, regardless of whether they're in a high-risk setting or not. And so based on that, we would expect to see a much lower positivity rate. I know a lot of testing sites that are sort of open to anybody are seeing more like 1%, 2%. And countywide, what we've been seeing is more like 5%, and the majority of tests are still being done like in the hospitals and in outpatient settings for people who have symptoms or who've been exposed. So it's still, pretty much any way you look at it, it is higher than we would have expected.
Why aren't we social distancing, especially when the cases are so high in our community?
Well, that's part of the reason why I've been wanting to get the word out, because I don't know that people know that the cases are so high in our community. I feel like we've gotten just so much information. It's getting fatiguing. It's overloading, overwhelming. And I think when that happens, people just either believe what they want to believe, you know, because it's just easier, or just throw it all out the window because it's just too much. And it's just too much that conflicts. And it's just really hard to kind of parse it all out. And that's frightening because it just makes me believe that we're going to keep seeing it increase and amplified.
Is it because we can't see it?
Well, I think that's part of it. Sometimes I, you know, try to use visual techniques or you know, talk about, you know, like if someone's wearing a lot of cologne or something like that, how even after they leave, you know, you could still smell it. Even if you are distancing, you could still get it. People who've had a gathering at their home, but everyone was staying 6 feet apart. Well, you were in the room together for, you know, over an hour. Breathing in the same air, it can spread that way, even with the 6 feet. keeping the door open is really important. Keeping the door, the windows, keeping that circulation going is really important.
You don't see it. People are walking around well. Also, too, you know, we've done a good job in California flattening the curve. So California doesn't look like what we're seeing in New York City. I don't know if that could be part of it, too.
I think it's part of it. I think there's some people saying, oh, this isn't all it was cracked up to be. And now today we have a situation where Black people are dying at a much higher rate. I feel like people are just sort of still wondering what's what, or it's not really hitting us that badly, or well, the governor's starting to open up the state. It must be, you know, must be okay. And so I think people are starting to let their guard down if they ever put their guard up in the first place.
Are you treating a lot of young people? Are younger people coming back positive?
We've seen all ages. We've seen whole, you know, households, multi-generational, and we've tested all ages as well. But I would also encourage young people who feel like I'm young, I'm healthy, I'll be okay. Think about the people that you care about. Think about the people you love, because I have talked to people who are carrying extreme guilt right now because they understand that, you know, they brought it into their household and that there is someone within their household who is not as capable of handling it and who may actually be in the hospital right now.
A lot of people are people of color. They're frontline workers. They're working at stores. What are other reasons that, you know, people of color may be having higher infection rates, higher death rates that hasn't been discussed?
You know, some people who are working in maybe conditions that were substandard to begin with, poorly ventilated environments, closely crowded with other people, like production lines and warehouses and things of that nature. They may not have the sick time, so they may start to feel a little feverish, a little cough, but I went to work anyway. I'm hearing a lot of that as I'm calling people back. They went to work sick, so who knows how many other people they've also spread it to within the workplace, but they're not able to afford to lose wages, and so they go ahead to go to work sick anyway. Public transportation is another one. You know, people are having to commute. Living in crowded household, you know, multiple roommates and other types of congregate living situations where it just spreads really quickly.
And we know that it spreads really quickly in crowds. And so there have been protests. What are your concerns about that?
I've been saying throughout this pandemic that we have a pandemic on top of a bunch of other epidemics, and racism is certainly one of them. But now we also have the justified anger and the unrest that's following, which I totally support and am in solidarity with. But the doctor in me, all the videos that I've seen, you know, I'm just visualizing this coronavirus coming out of people's mouths as they're yelling and they're taking their masks off or lifting their masks up to yell, and how many people are just in close proximity. You know, for a moment you can forget you're in a pandemic. And so it really has me bracing myself for what the coming weeks will hold.
When do you recommend people get tested for people that have been out protesting?
So I would say 3 days after symptoms or 8 days after exposure, you should have a pretty good chance of that test being accurate.
That was Dr. Noha Abulata speaking with KALW's Janae Darden. Visit our website to find out how to get tested at Roots Community Health Center or call 311. You're listening to Cross Currents from KALW News. I'm Ben Trefney in for Hana Baba. The clearest picture of the toll COVID-19 has exacted is its cost in human life. Families have been devastated and racial inequities laid bare. Nationally, African Americans are dying from COVID at twice the rate of whites. In some states, the rate is three times higher. Someone needs to be there to take care of those who've passed and to help families begin the grieving process. As part of our ongoing series, The Essentials, we've been bringing you overlooked stories of essential workers, people who are working outside their homes while the rest of us are sheltered in place. In this installment, we'll head to Colma to meet a funeral home director and see how the coronavirus may change his industry for good.
My name is Ruben Houston, born and raised in San Mateo, California. Been in the profession, the death care profession, for almost 21 years. Recently took over Colma Cremation Funeral Services here in Colma, California. That first contact with the family, that bond you create with them, and they share with you their loved one's story. And when you're part of the funeral service, you're part of something very special that will live in the lives and the hearts of those who that person has touched throughout the years of their lives. It's priceless. It's not just a job, it's a ministry. It has changed a lot. There was always the visitations, the rosaries, the wakes, the next day, the services, the masses, you know. It could be 10 people or it could be 1,000 people. When that just changed in a, just like that, people, you know, who are traditional, they don't know, they're confused. They don't know what to do because this is all they have known all their life was, oh, for grandma, we had a rosary. For grandpa, we had a rosary or a wake. Now we're limited to only 10 people. Who do you select to come to the service? Like, you only can have 10 people. This is the way of the future, actually. I think now, because people are using now technology, they're live streaming, it's changing. So I did a ID view, which is when a family will, you know, want to view prior to cremation. And we did a Zoom. We had probably over maybe 115 people from all over. The grandmother and had lived in Mexico, and there's people all over from Florida, New York. And people were like saying the rosary. They were saying the rosary. It was beautiful. It was just I was like, wow, this is beautiful. People don't actually have to be there. They can be anywhere and still be part of the celebration of life. This technology has been around for almost 20 years. Funeral homes, and let me just be the one to say, they didn't want to offer this because then it takes away from their service. Then it takes away from their revenue. You know, now they're adapting to it. They're like, oh, now they're promoting it. But, you know, we should have been promoting this almost 20 years ago. Pandora's box has been opened now. It's the way of the future. It's the way of life now. We just have to accept it. Technology is the way. Unfortunately, there's good and bads of it. You know, I get it. It's leaving a really big hole in the hearts of those who need that hug, who need that reassurance that, you know, things will get better. That closure is not there. That kiss on the cheek, reminiscing memories, sharing memories, all that, just no more.
When I talk to families, I share with them, you know, that's why it's so important to be around family. This season that we're in now has hit us. Is there like a reality check now? It's like, I need to spend more time with my kids. I need to spend more time with my husband, the date nights. I need to spend time with mom and dad, my friends or whoever, and let them know that I love them. This is a wake-up call because this is the new norm. I look at it this way. We all got to go. Sometime is way before our time. I want to no doubt be cremated. It's just a shell. Our spirit has been released. You know, I want to be scattered in Japan. And then the rest, San Mateo County, off the coast of San Mateo County, because that's born and raised. And
if possible, if possible, and it's been done. Some people have sprinkled some of the loved ones' crew remains at off the golf course or at a stadium, whatnot. Well, Oakland A's. I remember because my father used to take us all the time when we were little kids. He used to love it, you know. Even to this day, I bring my kids, to the games. Having a picture of myself on the wall or something, that's how I want to be remembered. Not someone viewing me in a casket. No. Nah. I want that happy, smiley face, you know, up in front somewhere. A slideshow of my life story with my family and friends and all of my accomplishments as a funeral director, helping those families do the transition of life. That's how I want to be remembered.
That piece was produced by Christopher Agusa. Christopher is a fellow in our Audio Academy program. You can also hear from Ruben in our podcast Day by Day, The Quarantine Diaries, available wherever you get your podcasts. This is Cross Currents. I'm Ben Trefney, in for Hana Baba. Our next story is from the Uncuffed team at San Quentin Radio.
San Quentin Radio, bringing you informative educational stories from the inside out.
In order to make something grow, you got to own a little dirt.
You don't tell, you see what goes on.
Because I like to be free. I like to move about the land.
You could hear a pin drop, and all of a sudden you heard this.
Close to 3,500 people are incarcerated at San Quentin. They live in cells that are 48 square feet and a little less than 8 feet tall, most of them with a cellmate. In this piece from our archives, reporter Tan Tran brings us the story of a pair of cellies who made the choice to live together despite a mountain of obstacles.
Hi, my name is Jarvis Yvonne Clark, but everybody calls me Lady J.
Hi, my name is Jacob Edward Gable. People just call me Jake.
What is my nickname for you?
Lady Mama J.
No, my nickname for you. What nickname did I give you?
Oh, she nicknamed Baby Bear.
Yeah, this is my Baby Bear.
I saw Lady J standing by the barber area, and she was kind of just staring at me. So at first I felt kind of awkward. And then she decides to walk up and introduce herself. So it wasn't as awkward as before. It was still awkward for me because I'm not used to
transgenders.
Well, no,
inmate people.
I'm not used to just people in general. So she came in and introduced herself and told me what she does for the inmates in the prison. And if I'm not comfortable with anything or if I have any problems with anything or anybody, to come to her and she'll take care of it or try to take care of it and do it, she can.
Have I been true to my word on that one?
Yes, she has. She has taken care of many problems that I've had.
Ooh, and there's been a multitude. Lord have mercy. Can you imagine a white boy, blonde, Aryan-looking white boy, coming into the system and he's living with a transgender? We'll get to that story later.
So you went and talked to these people. I didn't really have any issues until a couple days after, and mm-hmm. they were still trying to talk me into ignoring you and just walking right, like if you're at yard, walk right past you at yard, don't even acknowledge you mm-hmm. in the cafeteria or in the chow hall. Same thing, don't acknowledge you, don't talk to you, don't look at you. And
just pretend that I was dead to the world. I didn't exist.
Yeah, exactly. And I decided to move in with you because even after you went and talked to people, I was still having issues.
Mm-hmm.
And I didn't tell you about half of them because...
Why? You think I'm a tiger? And I would go... I would never attack. I just went and informed them that here at San Quentin, this is a prison where we have none designated people, and you will not act like that. So let me ask you a question. What made you say, I'm not going to follow that rule and just say, I'm going to hang out and talk to Lady J?
Because you were one of the only people that I felt comfortable with being around in the building.
That almost makes me want to cry.
Please don't.
I'm not.
And I didn't talk to anybody else except for maybe my cellie at the time that I had before I moved in with you. But you're the only person that I felt comfortable with. And I don't like being told what to do.
I love that. So living with Baby Bear, this is really my first time living with anyone that wasn't black and wasn't a gangbanger in this facility or in prison itself, or living with someone who is not a long-term inmate, right? I'm old enough to be his older big sister. We're going to leave it at that. Hush. But I'm very comfortable with him. He's like, I can come in and after having a bad day of dealing with these morons here, and I'm talking about the people in blue, and he sits there and he listens to me just gripe and, for lack of better words, bitch. I might bitch for about 2 hours, but he's listening, right?
And I'm half listening.
Half listening, but he's listening, right? And I appreciate that so much because it's like this calming force in my life right now, and that's what I need. How's it living with me?
Almost like being at home, because at home,
Oh, that's a beautiful answer.
At home, I live with four other women in my household. And I'm more comfortable around women than I am with men.
Okay.
So,
you know, that just validated my womanliness. Thank you, Baby Bear. So I appreciate you, kid.
I know.
Aww.
That story features the voices of Lady J and Jacob Gable and was produced by Ton Tran of San Quentin Radio in 2018. Ton is also a musician and one of the featured artists on the newly released San Quentin Mixtape, Volume 1. You can hear him on Rich People Problems. Find it on Apple Music, Spotify, or SoundCloud.
Rich people problems, I ain't never had that thing. Pockets empty, robberies was taking place from the slums. From the bottom, I ain't never had a thing. On my mama, I'ma make it out this place. Your rich people problems, I ain't never had that thing. No, no, no. Robberies was taking place from the slums. From the bottom, I ain't never had a thing. On my mama, I'ma make it out this place.
Our radio training program at San Quentin State Prison is supported by the California Arts Council with funding from the Department of Corrections and Rehabilitation. All content is approved by an information officer. While you're there, subscribe to the Cross Currents podcast so you can keep up with Bay Area news and culture wherever you want.
You ain't little, I live how you tell me how to feel, then. Sister had a baby with the dude that beats her still. I'm calling home collect. You ain't gotta deal with that. Sister, you a queen. Recognize your worth and leave us at. Brother, I got kids and no house that I can keep them at. If I try to live, I'll be homeless up in sack. And I'm like, damn, sis. Rich people pines, I ain't never had that thing.
Today's Cross Currents team includes Hana Baba, Janae Darden, Christopher Agusa, Nina Gensler-Debs, Precious Green, Marissa Ortega-Welch, B. Saul, and Eli Wirtschafter. Our engineers are James Rollins, Tarek Foda, and Gabe Graben. Content manager is Shireen Adel. Our managing editor is David Boyer. Deputy news director is Angela Johnston. Our opening theme music is by the John Santos Quintet, as interpreted by Daoud Anthony. And a special, well-deserved shout-out to Sona Avakian. She'll be graduating from KALW's Audio Academy on Thursday, and today's her last day working with our team. Thanks for all your hard work, taking part in pretty much everything you could, pushing outside of your comfort zone, and making a lasting difference in our lives. We'll miss you, Sona. For Cross Currents, I'm Ben Trefney.